The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Capitalism has stripped us of our democratic rights in the workplace, as voters, and as citizens. A small determined minority has seized the levers of power in this country, and there are many policies supported by the majority that they are able to prevent that would slow the train down. So another thing that we could do is focus on stealing back our democratic rights to make this country what we want it to be. If the pandemic did show us anything, it showed us things don't have to be the way they are. We've got a lot of choices we can make, and we're being prevented from making those choices.
Hi, I'm Roland Mathis, and Jennifer, you invited us to talk about the past, so I want to say something about that. An homage to my parents' generation, and to show what we can do when we have the political will. As many of y'all will remember, that was the age, our parents' generation, of the Victory Garden, the scrap drives. I remember my parents telling me that carpooling was so prized that if someone was seen driving in a car by themselves, they would say they're riding with Hitler. And that's the kind of thing that when we have the political will, we can do that. Now, in their perception, they were doing it to fight fascism and totalitarianism, not for an environmental purpose. But we simply can somehow generate that same political will and apply it to the environmental movement and make it something that is not identified with the political left, but rather is identified with patriotism, as a patriotic duty, as a matter of conserving our resources, conserving our nation. And it is possible. History teaches that degree of political will is in fact possible. So I just wanted to do a shout out to those who came before us.
Good morning. I want to add on to what has been said by others by saying that the video was very good, but to coin a phrase, it was preaching to the choir. We can take in the information that's in that video. We can see it and we can hear it. The problem is that we need to be able to speak to those people that for political reasons, religious beliefs and so forth, can't hear that message. We can't expect those people to hear the message that we are preaching if we're not preaching it in the language that they understand. So to add on to what Roland said, we've got to stop making this a left-right. We've got to stop making this conservative, liberal. This is about all of us. And we've got to understand that the message has to be spoken in a way that all can hear. I love the video, but I know that there are people who are in my family that the minute they saw it would walk out of the room because they don't understand it. They don't hear the language. And so it's up to us who do get it, and those of us who have the ability to speak to those people, to tailor that message, to make sure that everyone can hear it. I've been to Gus was talking about 400. I've been to every one of the meetings to put in the express lanes for Georgia 400 to talk against it because it makes no sense. Let's run mass transit up there and then we can end the whole entire problem. They said, we can add 10,000 cars a day to 400. Yeah, but you can add 100,000 people on a train. So, but I realized in a recent battle with the city council in Alpharetta, we have to speak the language that they can hear in order to get the message across. Thanks.
I'm going to approach this from a little difference in regards to the train. We all need to put our time and our talent and our efforts to help stop this train or at least slow it down. But while we're doing it, let's look out the window and see what's there. There's rewards everywhere. Right behind me is a forest full of birds. There's a squirrel nest in the tree right over here. I came to this church one Friday afternoon when I was working more physically, I was younger, okay. I was doing some work in the garden. As I approached it, I saw something up up on the roof. It was a giant red-tailed hawk just standing, sitting there on top of the chalice. And I looked at him, I think. He looked at me. I thanked him for being there, blessing my life, and he flew away. What did I receive? I received a blessing from that hawk. Nature is around us just begging to reward us. Take your time and let her. Let her reward us. Let's keep her safe. She deserves it. We deserve it. Find a place. It may be the beach. It may be the mountains. Mine was a little Indian park in northern Arizona. You may have seen some of John Wayne's movies in Monument Valley. My wife and I and my son and his wife and little boy, we're working through the West. And I've always, for some reason, seen these photos of Monument Valley, and I just had to go there. The night before, we'd had a sandstorm. That's high desert there. The sand is pinkish, ochre-looking. So when we were driving, these ochre clouds that had been blown up by the wind were just pink, beautiful, like flowers ready to blossom. When we got close to the park, it's like hot chocolate water running through the dry beds. That thrilled me. Then all of a sudden, we got to the park, paid our entrance fee, and I started looking, and it just absolutely is astounding. When I'm tired or need to boost, I've got this thing I shoot. It's called Monument Valley. I shoot my veins and arteries filled with the beauty and the loveliness of it. It was truly a life-changing thing. The beauty of it, the quietness of it. It was my reward for taking a quick look out the window.
I feel like there's a silent killer in all of this, and that's shame. A lot of people don't want to share what, you know, what they do. And if you have a reusable straw that you bring to the restaurant, and then, you know, your friend doesn't have one, and you kind of look at them weird, that's just perpetuating the cycle of shame. You know, you have a friend that is, just not conscientious of anything that they do. And I feel like, especially in the younger generations, we have this prideful idea that we're going to be the savior of the world. And it's not one person. It takes all of us. And the thing that is stopping us from being together is shame. You know, the corporations that are winning by keeping us apart don't want us to talk to each other. They want us to perpetuate that cycle of shame. They want us to feel isolated and alone, and like it's you and your little bamboo reusable straw against the world. But the important thing is to have discussions like this, to talk to each other, to talk to the people you love, and not just get yourself in an echo chamber of, oh, yes, we're all doing these good things, so let's pat ourselves on the back. It's important to be open and honest in the ways that maybe you're not so great. So maybe sometimes, you know, you forget to recycle your, you know, Walmart bags from the store or whatever it is. So shame is, you know, really the silent killer. And I think if we all choose to be honest about the ways in which we're not perfect and talk to the people in your life about like, hey, this is a little change you could make, you know, because no one can do it alone.
Good morning. When I hear about most social issues, I think of the aspect of turning them into two layers. One is sort of a top-down, where you're looking at government or large institutions to take action. And then there's also the bottoms-up approach, where it's on the individual, the family level, that level. Well, there's people out there that look at the political scene and that high level, and more power to them. But for me, I look at it from the grassroots level. What can I do? I start by looking in the mirror and the reflection of myself. And am I doing those things? Am I doing my part that I can do? I can't be responsible for what everybody else does. I can't be responsible for what the government does. I can't be responsible for the global scene of the world, but I am responsible for what I do. And so I would just like to encourage all of us to take that look in the mirror and see where we're contributing either to the good or to the bad of what we see around us. If we're protesting in our minds, oh, the shameful effects, the harmful effects of different things, but then what are we doing? So some of my pet areas are things like food waste. So can you go in your refrigerator, take a look in there, see what's there? And even better, can you take a look at what you throw in the trash? I look at how much consumerism do I do? Can you take a look in your closet and see things that you bought that you never wore? Or things that you wore a couple times and threw away? Or things that you're lusting to buy that you don't really need? All of those things contribute to the situation that's going on too. So that's sort of from the bottoms up. And if everybody works from the bottoms up, it will have the impact that we need, because in the end, that's where the action is from the bottom up. I would also like to respond to Gus, something that Gus had said, that he was expecting a grandchild, and it was tentative that that child's birthday could have been on Hitler's birthday, and that might have been, you know, an inauspicious thing to have happened. Well, I want to say that years and years ago, I took a look, just Googled who was born on my birthday, and guess what? Hitler was born on my birthday. So I'd like to say that we share the same birthday, but obviously we have a different philosophy. And so I'd like to say that some positive energy happened on that same day, different years. But let's just, I want to end just on a high note of encouraging people, grassroots, bottoms up, individual responsibility. Each individual action that each of us takes is a step in the right direction. It's like one of those pebbles that goes into the bowl. We keep putting one pebble at a time, we lift the water. Thank you.
I'm gonna try to keep this short, but I just wanted to say sometimes I think we get so caught up in like our future and what we want later. Sometimes we just need to stop and think about what we're doing. Is this good for the environment? Is this good for us? Is this good for other people? And try to take that, and eventually things will change. So yeah.
So the next part, I wanted to throw out another metaphor at you for what's in our future. How many of you, I know a lot of you like camping and some of us like glamping. How many of you have actually slept outdoors, not inside a tent? So the first time that I did that, I was with Gus and our girls, and I don't know why. I think we didn't bring enough tents, but the girls did not want to sleep outside alone, so I had to sleep with them because I'm the adult. And I was horrified that in the dark, in the night, the world was so alive. I couldn't sleep that night. It was just all these different sounds that I realized that I'm always in a bubble. Even when I was camping, when I've camped, I've been inside of a tent. So my point about this is, that's a lot like how humanity is. We are pretty smart people. and we've accomplished a lot. We have technology to show for that. The other day, I airdropped pictures from my phone to Gus's computer, just like that. So we've accomplished a lot, but we've also think ourselves as kingmakers, and that nobody or nothing is above us. And I think that's a misguided feeling and position, because we are nature. We are part of her. We're not separate from her. And so I want us to think outside of our box and our standard usual way of looking at things. And I want you to be creative and imaginative and think, what could be different? And then I'd like to see what comes up for you.
I'm Donna. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Imagine there are no nations. John's going to be singing Imagine later in the service today. And I think those words from John Lennon, one of the greatest philosophers, have a lot to say to us today. I wanted to speak to consciousness for a moment, because what we see in the world today is an exact and perfect replica of the consciousness that we have in our world today. So to change, whoever said it was an inside job, that is very true. The thing that's helping us change consciousness is the realization, because of the way that we're connected now, we're beginning to understand truly that we're all connected. And we're also beginning to understand that we are animals. We are of the earth. That's something that we've forgotten for a long time. In fact, if you think way, way, way back when hominoids were beginning to have a consciousness, one of the first things that they would want to do is to become comfortable, so that we'd begin pushing cold away by covering themselves. Covering with what? They didn't care, as long as they were warm. Then it became being convenient. I want to have something that kills faster, you know, so that I can eat and survive. So these ways of being separated from the earth and being something more than an animal, something that has dominion over the natural world, are certainly not new. Then they became inculcated with various religions, where we understand that we are to have dominion over the earth, and that we're something bigger or better than the earth and the animals, which we're not. So I think my only thing is to imagine, not to imagine, but to know what we are as animals, and to understand that we're one, not just connected. We are of the earth, we are the air, we are the fire inside ourselves and the water. And that's all I have to say.
Hi, I'm Stephanie. Jennifer mentioned technology, and technology, in theory, serves us, but in some ways we've become its slave. A new phone comes out. Well, suddenly our old phone won't do, a new tablet, a new computer. And each of these devices uses rare elements, rare minerals, and that are being mined by often children. And we're just, not really conscious and careful enough, I think, because we always have to have the newest, the latest, and it's more expensive than the price we pay for it.
Hi, my name's Laura, and my background, my day job is that I focus on positive psychology. And what comes to mind here, and I've loved this conversation, I've loved being part of this. Thank you so much, Jennifer and Gus, for facilitating. And you, Dawn, I've forgotten your name.
Rafaela.
So one of the things that feels really important to me for us to remember is to take an appreciative inquiry approach to this, because I think that there is such a feeling of fatigue and overwhelm. We've mentioned this, right? So looking at what is working well, you know, and some of us talked about how some of our rivers are getting cleaned up. You know, we are making positive movement, because when we look at what's working well, we can feel like, okay, there's a success that I can expand upon. It gives us a feeling of a path forward. So that's one encouragement that I have for all of us as we strategically think about, you know, our movement forward. And also, we need to empower our youth, because those cute little faces are harder to ignore than, you know, our older faces, so that we can put them forward and help them understand that they're part of the solution. Because our civic engagement, unfortunately, you know, generation by generation is falling. And in Georgia, we are among the lowest in the nation for our young people feeling like they can be part of the solution. So that, to me, as we think about the future, feels really important, that we engage our young people in being part of the solution and capturing their voices, capturing their energy, so that we can all rise up together.
Hey everyone, I'm Miguel. I just wanted to share some ideas that I have about ways that I'm changing my day-to-day. I work from home in a technical job, so I spend 8 to 10 hours every day in a dark room on a computer. And that's very normal for me, but lately it's been taking a huge toll on my psychology and my sense of humanity. And so one of the things that has recently helped, I got a dog, and I started taking her to the park, and I realized that the best thing that I could do for her on any day is take her to a nature trail. And it fills my heart so much to see her enjoy sniffing everything that I realize it's also the best thing I can do for me that day as well. And so that brings me to an idea from one of my favorite poets, Gary Snyder, that when a creature is in its right place, it becomes medicine for the world around it. And that's an idea that I'm trying to bring into my daily life of trying to spend as much time, not just in nature, but around other life forms, taking hikes as regular as I can, trying to understand that being a person and really acknowledging my own humanity, it's not just about these human communities and human activities like work and church, but it's also about being in communion with the interconnected web of other life forms all around us. And I think if we were aware of that constantly every day, we would ask ourselves, you know, what role am I playing in this ecology? It would help us acknowledge, you know, how wild it is that sometimes the fruit that we ate is extracted unjustly from an ecology thousands of miles away. And I think that consciousness can start to create the political will that we're thinking about.
I want to thank everybody that spoke, and I want to thank all of you for being here. It's important for us to find momentum, and individually, most of us are probably doing things every day. Let us not forget that the power of a group is immeasurable. Thank you.
I believe very strongly in UU's seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. I believe that Mother Nature and her entire ecosystem know and understand much more than we do, and I have faith that the diversity of life on our planet will continue to flourish as it goes through its natural cycles. Or perhaps that's what I want to believe. I'm not sure. There's no doubt that we have given her pause. We have used our species' dominance for our own benefit without regard for its effect on other forms of life and the ecosystem that we all depend upon. Have we bit the hand that feeds us? Perhaps taken a nibble. But with this realization, we can do something about it. We can bring about an evergreen revolution that offers productivity in perpetuity without ecological harm. We can vote for policies that promote the use of renewable energy, policies that consider the effect on the environment and not just on the effect of profit. We can use our purchasing power to demand change. Two authors of a very recent international climate report can say it much better than I can. This is from Robert Lampert of the Party Rand Graduate School and Elizabeth Gilmore, Associate Professor of Climate Change, Technology, and Policy, published just last week on April 18th. Quote, "It's now inevitable that societies will either transform themselves or be transformed. But there is reason for optimism. The latest reports from the International Panel on Climate Change discuss changes ahead, but also describe how existing solutions can reduce greenhouse gas emissions and help people adjust to impacts of climate change that can't be avoided. To slow climate change, we will have to shift how it generates and uses energy, transports people and goods, designs buildings, and grows food. That starts with embracing innovation and change. The IPCC report includes numerous examples that can help steer such positive transformation. For example, renewable energy is now generally less expensive than fossil fuels, so a shift to clean energy can often save money. Communities can also be redesigned to better survive natural hazards through steps such as maintaining natural wildfire breaks and building homes to be less susceptible to burning. Land use and the design of infrastructure, such as roads and bridges, can be based on forward-looking climate information. Insurance pricing and corporate climate risk disclosures can help the public recognize hazards in the products that they buy and companies that they support for investment. No one group can enact these changes alone. Everyone must be involved, including governments that can mandate and incentivize change, businesses that often control decisions about greenhouse gas emissions, and citizens who can turn up the pressure on both." End quote.
Now, let us extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we meet again.
What a service. If you would like to be a part of a group that's working to make a difference, I invite you to join us in the Earth Ministry Committee. Our chair, John Burkhart, is right over here. If you'd like to speak with him, any of us that are on that committee, come and join us. One of my favorites, Jane Goodall, says each one of us matters, has a role to play, makes a difference. Together, we must reestablish our connections to the natural world and with the spiritual power that is around us. Now, go out in peace and love of this beautiful world and each other.
The Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.